You're listening to the Bowman of the Yard podcast. Exhibit A.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Here we are. And what are we doing here then?
Well, it seems we are having a pint in the Silver Cross.
Isn't it splendid? I don't know why I came over like a sort of an Ealing comedy policeman then for a moment.
It's in the blood, maybe.
It is in the blood. But here we are at the Silver Cross for the very first Bowman of the Yard podcast. I'm Richard James, and you are?
Peter Crouch.
And now, I just should just point out, you're not the Peter Crouch, of course. You're a Peter Crouch.
Well, I'm a Peter Crouch, apparently becoming a six-pack.
Now, I should just point out for the people listening at home that, well, Peter, you and I go back a bit, don't we?
We do indeed, yeah. 15 years, is it? Or more. No, probably more, actually.
But the great thing is we share many things in common. We're big fans of a bit of old Victoriana, a bit of detective mystery stuff. We like a bit of the old Doctor Who and a bit of the old Star Trek, don't we?
Oh, we definitely do. Absolutely.
So we're here really primarily to talk about the Bowman of the Yard book series. But I have no doubt at all that we'll be veering off into other areas as we go along. And that'll be fine too, don't you think?
I think we can wander off topic occasionally, can't we?
So I'll just put an order for a couple of pints of pint of porter, Peter. It's got a nice ring to it.
Oh, a pint of porter for Peter. It's got a lovely ring to it. Yes, I'll have one of those, please.
And also a couple of packets of port scratchings, please. Thank you very much. So let's have a little chat about what we've got coming up in our very first Bowman of the Yard podcast. We've got some news, because today is a big day. It's January the 10th. So happy new year, if it's not too late to say that already. And today is a rather big day in the world of Bowman of the Yard with a very special release, which we'll be talking about shortly. We've also got some letters to the yard, and we'll also find an author in the cells at Bow Street. You'll find out more about that later on. And do stay tuned at the very end for the first part of a short story, The Smithfield Murder. Yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches.
It is, isn't it? I do love The Smithfield Murder.
Yes, well, that's where it all began, really, although, of course, I wrote The Head in the Ice first. But The Smithfield Murder, I think, was where people started to really take notice of the series, which is great.
Interesting. I read it again recently, and very evocative and almost written in smell-o-vision. I could smell that market.
Smell-o-vision. Yeah, I did actually have a few complaints, particularly amongst vegetarian readers who weren't quite so keen on all the... Well, the Smithfield meat market stuff. We won't go into that right now in case people are eating their dinner. So, I think it's about time then. Shall we head straight over and have a bit of Bowman of the Yard news?
I think we should.
Extra, extra! Read all about it!
Well, the big news, of course, is that today sees the release of the third book in the Bowman of the Yard series called The Body in the Trees.
Wow.
Now, as a special treat, keep listening, because towards the end of this podcast, I'll be asking you at home a question. And if you send your answer in to podcast@bowmanoftheyard.co.uk, I shall pick a winner to receive a signed copy of The Body in the Trees, hot off the press, and straight to you in the next few days. So let me, without further ado, just read the blurb from the back of the book so you get some idea of what it's all about. When a man is found hanged in the woods around the village of Larton, a troubled Inspector Bowman is dispatched to investigate, only to discover that this is the latest in a series of supposed suicides. He finds a village beset by suspicion, where every man is his neighbour's enemy and the fingers point at any number of parties. It's not long, however, before Inspector Bowman's fragile mental state places those closest to him in even greater danger.
Goodness me, you've sent Bowman on a holiday.
Well, I have, actually, and it is set in and around the fictional village of Larton, but you know where that really is, Peter.
Is it perhaps where you live?
It is. And here's a bit of bonus Bowman news. If you've yet to be tempted by the Bowman of the Yard series, then you might well be delighted to hear that to mark the release today of The Body in the Trees, I'm offering the first two adventures from the Bowman of the Yard series, The Head in the Ice and The Devil in the Dock, at just £2.99 on Kindle. So if you'd like to read your books on Amazon Kindle, then head on over to my website, www.bowmanoftheyard.co.uk, and follow the links to Amazon, where you'll find both The Head in the Ice and The Devil in the Dock for just £2.99. That's a pound off, and that offer applies to the UK only.
I always loved those Sherlock Holmes tales where they would venture out of London and go into the suburbs somewhere or the villages, and absolutely.
Well, that's the thing. After two books set in the alleys and the dank streets of London, I thought it might be quite nice to get Bowman out into the countryside and get the reader out into the countryside as well and experience some sort of open horizons and big skies and a bit of fresh air, just to take a bit of a breather before book four.
Did you happen to find that hard, sort of taking it out of London? You know, because you've got London as your kind of anchor, all of the streets that you know and the research that you've done, and suddenly you're somewhere different. Is that hard?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, I found it really difficult. I really missed doing the research. One of the joys of writing the short stories and the previous novels is that I'm able to go online and find old maps and actually look at the streets in which the stories are set. And, you know, if I get on a train and head into London as well, I can walk around the streets and imagine that Bowman is striding up and down with his hat and his coattails flapping behind him, and Inspector Hicks is around Piccadilly Circus looking for a drink in the nearest pub or whatever it might be. But suddenly I was in sort of a more fictional world, having to literally make it up as I went along. But having based it in my own village, I suppose, helped, because that gave me an idea of the sort of geography of the place.
Yes, I suppose you've still got that, haven't you? You've still got that sort of way of anchoring it. But he's out of his normal routine, normal stomping ground.
And by the end of the book, I mean, no spoilers, of course, but things don't end up well for old Inspector Bowman, I'm afraid.
Oh dear. And did I see you mention perhaps in a blog that the next short story has our Inspector Graves?
Exactly.
As the sort of...
That's right. So
so that doesn't really bode too well for Bowman, does it?
Indeed. So this is the Camden Kidnappings, which is the fifth book from Bowman's casebook. These are a series of short stories, which are each set between the novels. Actually, they're free to readers. If you go to bowmanoftheyard.co.uk, you can subscribe there and you can get all the short stories for free. There are four so far, and the fifth, the Camden Kidnappings, is due any day now, and it's set immediately after the events in The Body in the Trees, and it's told from the perspective of Sergeant Graves. For the first time, Sergeant Anthony Graves gets a short story to himself, which, yes, would seem to indicate that something's happened to George Bowman.
I think I just promoted him. I called him Inspector Graves. Maybe I know something.
Now, I should just say that this podcast is the first of, I don't know, let's see how we go. But we're aiming to get one out every month or so with some interesting news from the Bowman universe. Every time a new short story is released, or if there's news about the books or whatever it might be, we'll try and pop it in. Also, every month we're going to have a guest author. We'll be hearing from them in the cells at Bow Street. And this month we have Tom Hodden. Now, Tom Hodden has written lots and lots of books. You can find him on Amazon. They include things like The Threadbare Book of Nightmares, which is three tales that follow those whose lives are touched by dark powers of the supernatural. So we'll be hearing from Tom a little later on. But in the meantime, let's see what our lovely listeners have been up to as we open some letters to the yard.
Letters to the yard.
Absolutely, yes. Well, we've got quite a few letters coming in, and we picked out some of the choice ones. And I've got one here from Isabel Saucier, mm-hmm. And she's asking you, what do you do when you're stuck? I know you said you try and write 1,000 words per day, but surely it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes I can barely write a couple of sentences. I have no discipline. So, Richard, how do you do it?
Yeah, that 1,000 words a day is quite a good one for me, because that essentially means in the space of about 2.5 months or 3 months or so, you can write a sort of 70, 72, 74,000 word novel, which is a good length for a novel, I think. It's about the length that my Bowman of the Yard novels are. So just 1,000 words a day, that takes me maybe a couple of hours, sometimes three on a bad day. But what it does mean is that I have the rest of the day to myself if I'm not working, and then I can sort of mull over ideas for the 1,000 words that I'm going to write the next day. As to what I do when I get stuck, I just walk away, really. I don't get too stressed about it. I think the important thing is to set yourself easily attainable goals. So if 1,000 words a day is too much, make it 500, that's okay. Or even just writing something. As long as you have a sort of feeling of forward momentum, I think that's the useful thing.
Do you go back and review what you've written?
At periods, yes. I tend to sort of write on. I just keep going. And only when I reach perhaps the end of a particular set piece or something, a really important chapter, do I go back and just review it and make sure it's all clear, both to me as the writer and, of course, hopefully to the reader as well. And then once the book is finished, it goes through proofreading and editing and so on, and that's where I kind of do a loose second draft just to make sure that everything stacks up and all the clues are there and it's not to, it does make some sort of sense at least. Now, I have something here from Alex Pass, who spotted some rather interesting chapter titles in The Devil in the Dock, which is the second book in the series, particularly chapter 23, he says, The Web of Fear. He says, sadly, no yetis in the underground yet. So I feel perhaps I should explain. What do you think, Peter?
I think you should.
Well, being a bit of a fan of the old Doctor Who, I've decided that where I can, I might just slip in the odd episode or story title for some of my chapters. So, in fact, in The Devil in the Dock, we've got The Web of Fear, but I think we've also got Parting of the Ways, and Inferno, I think, is another chapter title. And I've also managed to slot a couple into The Body in the Trees, the latest novel out today. So if you're reading it at the moment and you're a Doctor Who fan, look out for two titles in the chapters of The Body in the Trees.
Yes, I did have a chuckle. You sent me a couple of pictures of the title pages, and some definite... Fifth Doctor, possibly, we're looking at?
Why not?
Yes, we love the Fifth Doctor.
I mean, it is quite interesting. There's a bit of crossover. If you head onto Amazon, you can see where people have bought your book. You can also see other things that they have also bought. And, of course, there's a bit of Sherlock Holmes, as you might imagine, but a lot of crossover with Doctor Who as well. So lots of people who have been buying the Bowman of the Yard series have also been buying the current Blu-ray box sets from Doctor Who, Season 23, and Colin Baker stuff and Sylvester McCoy stuff. So it's quite interesting.
I suppose there is a similarity or a kind of a crossover with a character like the Doctor who is very cerebral, and someone like Bowman, as in Sherlock Holmes, that kind of solving of crimes, so using their grey matter rather than their fists.
Yeah.
So maybe there's that similarity that attracts people.
Yeah, it is interesting. I remember I did a bit of work with Clive Merrison a long time ago now, and he said that he's considered a bit of a double whammy in fandom circles because he voiced Sherlock Holmes in, I think they did the whole canon on Radio 4. He played Holmes in the whole adaptations of all the short stories and novels of Sherlock Holmes. But also, I think, played a part in The Tomb of the Cybermen, a legendary second Doctor Who adventure as well.
Ah.
So he was a bit of a double whammy.
He's done both. Yes, no, his Sherlock Holmes was marvellous. He did it with Michael Williams, I believe, and they did the whole canon. So, they were very good.
Well, maybe one day, Peter, maybe we'll do the audio adventures of Inspector Bowman. What do you think of that?
Oh, wouldn't that be marvellous? And who would you play?
I wonder.
Need I ask?
I couldn't possibly comment.
I'd like a bit of Ignatius, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think you'd be a good Hicks. Yeah, that's right. I think we need someone slightly younger to be Sergeant Graves, wouldn't we?
Yes. But then on radio, you know, you can possibly get away with it, can't
you? That's true. Absolutely. Yeah. Could age down quite easily, I suppose. You've got one there from Earl Black, I think.
Indeed I have. Earl says, "Hello, Richard. Have both books now. We'll commence reading shortly. One thing I wanted to mention, you probably know this already, but there's a tabletop game called Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. There are three of them now. Great co-op against the player, individual play, that kind of thing. Lots of clues, great format, and you get a copy of the Times related to the game's element."
So, nice.
It's great, isn't it? A sort of a mock-up of the Times.
I've not heard of that. Yeah.
Love it.
I should look out for that. I think maybe if we could book a table at the Silver Cross and... get the Sherlock Holmes board game out. That sounds like a fun evening.
Yeah, a pint of porter and some pork scratchings.
And finally, I've got one from Carl Scott here, who says, "The moment I knew I was invested in Bowman of the Yard came when I was downloading Devil in the Dock. The sense of anticipation, knowing that I would soon be with Bowman and Sergeant Graves on another investigation, was quite tangible." Well, that's lovely to hear. Thank you, Carl. And I hope you're feeling the same today, as the third book, The Body in the Trees, is released. And actually, while we're at it, here's your opportunity at home then to win a signed copy of The Body in the Trees. And I'm going to ask you a very simple question. And all you have to do is email me at podcast@bowmanoftheyard.co.uk with your address, and I will very happily send you a signed copy of the book. The question is this: in which fictional village is The Body in the Trees set? If you want a little bit of help, you can always listen back to this podcast, because it's been mentioned a couple of times, or head on over to bowmanoftheyard.co.uk and you might even find it there.
I think you mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast. I'm going to have to wait for you to release it, listen to it, and play it back.
Now, Peter, you were mentioning earlier, when we were speaking, that you had thought that maybe we should think of some names for our listeners. And we, between us, came up with things like the Scotland Yarders and so on.
Yes.
But I've actually been doing a little bit of research as to what the police were called in Victorian times. So I've got a few Victorian police nicknames, if you want to hear them.
Oh, love it. Yes, please. Let's hear.
Well, due to the blue uniforms they used to wear, they were very often called Blue Bellies. They were called Peelers and Bobbies, of course, after Robert Peel. Beetle Crushers, they were called. And again, because of the blue uniform, Unboiled Lobsters.
Wow.
Which is quite extraordinary. But my favourite, of course, would be Mutton Shunters.
Mutton Shunters?
Yeah.
That sounds vaguely rude. But
I don't think that's quite right for our listeners, though, is it? Maybe we'll just think of something else in the fullness of time.
Yes. I mean, I always remember the Baker Street Boys. Which were the sort of urchins and spies that used to inform for Sherlock Holmes. So maybe something, but the Bowman Street Boys or the Bowman's Boys, or but then of course they're always boys. So the Scotland Yardsters.
Yes, Bowman's Irregulars. I don't know, something like that.
Oh yeah.
If you have any ideas at home, do drop them into podcast@bowmanoftheyard.co.uk because we'd love to hear what you think. Coming up, we have our first ever visit to the cells at Bow Street. But first, here's a quick word from some of our sponsors. Corns and bunions removed and enlarged toe joints reduced by using Thompson's Corn Plaster. Those who are troubled with the discomfort of corns or bunions will be glad to have attention called to this remedy. It is a simple plaster, thin as silk and comfortable to the foot. Thousands of testimonials. Packets are 1 shilling, 1.5 pence each. From sole proprietor M.F. Thompson, chemist, 17 Gordon Street, Glasgow, or 97 Prince's Street, Edinburgh. Ask for Thompson's and take no other. Perfect fit, guaranteed wear. The Y and N patent diagonal seam corset will not split in the seams nor tear in the fabric. Madam Mary Rose writes, they fit perfectly and are far superior in every way to all the English and French corsets I have tried. Made in white, black, and all the fashionable colours and shades in the Italian cloth, satin and coutil. Also in the new sanitary woolen cloth, 4 shillings, 11 pence per pair. Sold by all drapers and ladies' outfitters. Tally-ho! Reynard & Co., breeches makers and military tailors, makers of the Tally-ho combination, comprising breeches with leather knees and khaki, etc. Simply laced together and clean separately. Hunting garments of every description. Reynard & Co., 12 Grand Hotel Buildings, Trafalgar Square, London, SW. Tally-ho! Now, I think it might be time then to head on over to the cells at Bow Street to see who we've got locked up this month.
You're nicked.
Hi, my name's Tom Hodden and I write under this pen name T.E. Hodden. I write romance for the Fredbear Hearts titles. I write horror for the Fallowgrave titles. And I'm features editor for Mum's Favourite Reads, a free online magazine where I get to interview such exciting people as Bernard Cornwell, Johnny Bull and Adam Hart Davis. Some of my works you might be interested in include the Curate Barley Mysteries, which are light-hearted mystery adventures of a London priest, or the Flight of a Nightingale books, which are science fiction books for young adults, in which teenage refugees try and escape an intergalactic war. Now, if you could let me out, I'd rather like to get back to my writing, please. Thank you.
Well, there we are. Tom Hodden, bless him, in the cells at Bow Street. I suppose we ought to let him out, really, so he can carry on writing. Now, Tom is an author based in Kent, but he's also a lifelong fan of comic books, science fiction, myths, legends, and history. He's contributed to loads of podcasts and blogs and anthologies over the years as well. So Tom's a very busy writer, and I really would recommend you check him out and have a look at some of his stories over on Amazon.
Time, please, gentlemen. Let's have all your glasses.
Oh, you better drink up.
Oh, okay. There we go. Harris, the landlord, has spoken.
Time to drink up and go home.
Exactly. There we are. Well, thank you all for joining us for the very first Bowmen of the Yard podcast. Remember the competition, In Which Fictional Village is the third book The Body in the Trees set. Send it into podcast@bowmenoftheyard.co.uk and I will pick a winner. And also, if you fancy a little bit of a story, hang on after the closing music and you'll hear the first 5 minutes or so of the short story narrated just for you, The Smithfield Murder. So all remains is to say thank you very much. Lovely to see you, Peter.
Lovely to see you.
Shall we meet up again next month back in the Silver Cross?
Oh, usual seats, I think, yes.
Usual seats by the fire.
Absolutely. See you then.
See you then. The Smithfield Murder, a short story from Bowman's Casebook by Richard James. February 1892. Archie Walton hated these February mornings. In all his 11 years, he'd never known hardship like it. As all around him the city slept, he was obliged to eschew his bed and open the trader's stall held by his master at Smithfield Market. On account of a clear night sky, tonight felt especially cold. His eyes stung as he blinked into the freezing air. Already his fingers were numb. As he walked away from the Thames up Old Bailey, he looked around him at the buildings. Newgate Prison stood imperious and forbidding, as if in warning. Behind, the dome of St. Paul's dared show itself on the skyline. The road narrowed as he approached St. Sepulchre's Church, and already he could hear the squawking and swearing of the early traders at Smithfield. Archie had been in the church just once. He had filched some apples from a street stall last summer, and found himself on the wrong end of a peeler's wrath. Giving a holler, the constable gave chase, his hobnailed boots skidding on the streets beneath him. Archie was young and fast, and had soon left his pursuer behind on Hosier Street. He took sanctuary amongst St. Sepulchre's broad, uncluttered interior and wide supporting pillars. As he took the time to catch his breath, Archie allowed his eyes to wander to the church's coffered ceiling. A series of vaults and arches held the great roof aloft. A pattern of sunken square panels led the eye to the centre of a dome. There, as the light of a summer's day bled through the stained glass, Archie ate his apple. He walked to the chancel and let his hand run across the altar. The wood had felt alive and warm to the touch. As he spat pips to the floor, Archie took a final look around. If the majesty of St. Sepulchre's had made any impression at all on his young mind, he didn't show it. His feast concluded, he had simply wiped his mouth on a sleeve, allowed himself a chuckle at the afternoon's events, and made his way out through the transept door. That summer's day seemed a long time ago now. Archie shivered to his core as he made his way around the church onto Snow Hill. The bell chimed twice from its tower, heralding his arrival at the market on his appointed hour. Before him, there was a circus of activity. The hustle and bustle seemed quite at odds with the early hour. The grand, vaulted entrance was crammed with carts and drays, each disgorging themselves of their loads into the waiting arms of butchers and traders. Great sides of beef were heaved onto shoulders. Cuts of pork were passed aloft from man to man. Geese, chickens, and rarer fowl were slung over arms and carried gracelessly through the iron arches at the market's entrance. Livestock was shepherded in from their carts to be shown at their best in the hope of a sale. Nearing the entrance hall to the ostentatiously named Grand Avenue, the sweet, ripe odour of raw meat and manure pricked at Archie's nostrils. He shouldered his way through the throng, stepping this way and that across a curious dance floor. Each man embraced his load as a partner, waltzing his way to his allotted stall. Cleavers fell and knives struck. The air was rent with the rasp of saw on bone. Cattle that had been driven through the streets of London were herded to their pens. Chickens clucked from their crates, and pigs bedded down in their straw. Kicking through the sawdust at his feet, Archie found himself at his stall at last. Blowing on his fingers to restore some feeling, he reached into a pocket for his keys. He'd been entrusted with them by his master. Solomon Hibbert was always late. He had held his place in the market for 40 years and felt his longevity alone entitled him to certain liberties. Being late for the morning's work was one of them. He had taken Archie on just a year previously. Taking a young lad from a poor house and putting him to work chimed with Hibbert's ideals. Paying him a pittance chimed with them even more. It was Archie's job to open the stall, direct the deliveries, and await the arrival of his master. If he was lucky, he'd get a penny for his pains or a sausage to throw on the brazier beneath Holborn Viaduct. Archie pulled up the shutter with a clatter. The lamps in the hall barely penetrated the gloom within.
"Shift your ass, boy."
Archie turned to see a thick-set man with a haunch of beef at his shoulder. He rolled a cigarette between his teeth.
"Or I'll drop this on your head like a ton of bricks."
He slammed the carcass on the block in Hibbert's stall, wiping blood from his hands with his apron.
"Foreman will be round in a minute for payment."
Dropping ash to the floor, the man returned to his cart at the market's entrance, ready to shoulder another burden in the name of commerce. Archie rolled his eyes. Stamping his feet against the cold, he turned his attention to the meat on the block. Room would have to be made. Pausing only to light a lamp on the wall, he crept to the back of the stall where it was due to hang. A rail ran the length of the right-hand wall, some 8 feet from the ground. It was crammed with sides of pork, haunches of beef, and lambs wrapped in muslin cloth, all suspended on hooks, and all to be sold in the next 3 days. Hibbert was overreaching himself again. Bracing himself against the first carcass, Archie leaned against it to give it a hefty push. The meat swung back an inch or two, then came to a stubborn halt on the rail. It had snagged. He pressed his shoulder to the animal, trying again. Still, it stayed resolutely where it hung. Muttering under his breath, Archie grabbed a wooden stool from the counter and dragged it through the sawdust to the rail. If he could make room for the beef on the rail, Hibbert could lift it up on his arrival. Shifting his weight on the stool, Archie stretched up, feeling with his fingers where the snag might be. He felt nothing. Leaning against the side of pork to his left, he felt the blockage was behind it. Giving it a push, he unbalanced himself and fell to the floor. A peal of laughter rang out behind him, and Archie turned to see a passing tradesman with a string of sausages about his neck.
"Best laugh I've had all morning," he chuckled.
As the man passed on about his errand, Archie looked up and behind the side of pork that had defeated him. There, some 3 feet from the ground, hung a pair of feet. Panicking, Archie grabbed the side of pork and swung it towards the front of the rail. It revealed a spectacle so grisly that the boy was suddenly lost for breath. Looking up beyond the feet, he saw a slick of blood had dried on the unfortunate man's legs. His arms hung limp at his side, his chin resting incongruously on his chest, as though he were simply asleep. Archie's hand went involuntarily to his mouth. There before him hung Solomon Hibbert.